Hello, everybody. Hello, my name is Sean Sterling, and we have everyone here pretty much. We got Seth Milstein.
Hello.
Kevin Werkheiser.
Hey.
Chris Tognati.
Meh.
And Sean Hulbert.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And welcome to another episode of the Edwin Pobert Film Club. Tonight, we've got a pretty good show tonight. We're gonna review The Forbidden Kingdom. And we've got another episode of Forgettable Villains for Forgettable Films, and another episode of Pod Monkeys for you tonight. So it's gonna be a good show. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Good. I got the chance to see Leatherheads again, and I just want to reiterate how insane it is that you like the commissioner from that movie. Because I was watching it with that in mind, and the last time you see him, he's, you know, George Clooney's kind of the scrappy, likable protagonist. The commissioner's sitting behind his desk saying, you know, like, you know, I really don't want you to play anymore, Dodge. And he's like, Dodge is like, true. Yeah, too bad you can't kick me out. And then it cuts to the commissioner with a smarmy grin on his face. He says, nope, but I can find the hell out of you. And then George Clooney says, like, he says, like, you wouldn't do that or something like that. And then the commissioner goes, try me. such an unlikable character.
If you wanna revisit this debate, audience, you can listen to the Leatherheads podcast. I stand by my my support of that powerful man. I started watching The Wire recently, and he shows up as a judge.
Really?
In that, so I was very pleased.
Same sort of a.
I was pleased to see that he's always calling the shots. He's the police captain, Inside Man too, which I discovered.
Oh, is he really?
Well, yeah.
Inside Man's.
Inside Man
is very good. I like Inside Man more than I like his character in Leatherheads.
Wow, that's quite the statement.
quite the I agree with that as well. But again, good show coming up, so stay tuned. So let's turn it over to Sean Hulbert, our resident movie encyclopedia, to tell us just what is Forbidden Kingdom about.
Well, Forbidden Kingdom is the new film from Rob Minkoff, who steps out of his element because this movie features no talking cartoon lions or talking CGI mice. So he seems like kind of your odd choice to direct your kung fu action film.
Lion King, yeah. Stuart Little.
Really?
Yeah. That's odd. And it stars Hollywood legends, legends all around, Jackie Chan and Jet Li in their first team-up.
All right. Forbidden Kingdom. Well, Hulbert, did you like Forbidden Kingdom? How'd you feel about it?
I loved Forbidden Kingdom. I've seen better films in the cinema since this other film I'm about to mention, but it's the most fun I've had watching a movie since Stardust.
Really?
Really? Wow. What about you, Chris?
It was pretty average, I'd say. It surpassed my expectations that I usually actively hate martial arts movies.
But this one
did not take itself too seriously, which I think is the downfall of a lot of movies of that genre. Yeah, it was all right.
What do you think,
Kevin?
I enjoyed it. I sort of thought from the preview that I might really hate it, and I didn't. I thought the kung fu in it was good. There's, you know, there's nothing really remarkable about it as a movie except that Jet Li and Jackie Chan are in it. I thought it was enjoyable. I was surprised at how much it stuck with the feeling I got from the trailer, which was that the kid character was not really important and clearly it was just about the other characters. And the movie confirmed that.
I thought it was pretty average, pretty middle of the road. That's what it evened out to me. I also, like Chris, I don't like kung fu movies generally. But I was gonna say the same thing, is it had a sense of humor about itself, which was probably what prevented me from disliking it. So yeah, I'd say average.
I liked it. I definitely wouldn't go as far as Homer, but I definitely had quite a good time. In like whenever I saw things that are like, oh, that's not really a good piece of filmmaking right there. I just completely tossed that aside and just dove right back in. I had a lot of fun.
I really did not like the first like 15 minutes of it when it's in present day.
Yeah.
Because that just seemed like a
50s greasers in a 70s movie that were in the 21st
century. Yeah, I know. It's so outdated how one-dimensional all of that all of his current life is, and I was happy about how quickly they moved away from that.
Well, I enjoyed the fact that they really limited that aspect of the story. They didn't feel they need to get into his family or his
they didn't really need to
expand the least interesting part of this movie.
True, I
enjoyed how little the least favorite part of the movie existed.
Yeah, I get that.
I wish they'd put a little more effort into that 15 minutes, just because it got off the movie off to me to a very, very bad start, and I was kind of angry. 15
really?
Minutes. Yeah, it was. Wow. I mean, with him, as soon as he wakes up from the dream in his bed, and you see all the kung fu posters around his bed, and there's a kung fu movie on the TV, I thought, okay, I have a feeling this character's only trait is going to be that he likes kung fu, yeah. And then that was kind of confirmed over the next 10 minutes of the movie. I was happy when they left that and they went to feudal Japan.
I get the feeling China. I get the feeling
mythical China.
I get the feeling that it was also the filmmaker's only attribute was that they like kung fu movies.
Yeah,
didn't feel like they had a lot of anything else going for them. It felt like it was a lot of like
talking line films.
Oh, you're right. But I mean, I guess the writing then. But it was just sort of it felt like a rehash of a lot of other kung fu movies, and a loving rehash, and sort of like what Kill Bill would have been at its worst, where it's just like, man, I love kung fu movies. Let's just have some kung fu in this movie. And that's the whole movie. But you know, in an enjoyable, you know, sort of lighthearted way. Yeah, the kid I found just really, just so flat. I like,
yeah,
kept,
he was really
like,
no,
whenever he was,
no, no, no.
Whenever
I
he
like
was
so thinking. Much better than this, like,
oh,
a lot of other those
no.
types.
Oh, no, way, it, no way.
It made me miss Ralph Macchio so much. I can't even tell you.
Well, he's not Ralph Macchio, but I definitely enjoyed his contribution. Because especially in a movie where he could so easily be overshadowed, I felt like he sort of
really
be a part of the film.
He was a shadow.
He was just such a stock character.
Yeah,
and there's no attempt to give him any personality or.
That's not true.
They
set up that he's a coward.
Yeah.
At the beginning, that's not really. And then he triumphs over that, and that's
not a character. That's a plot, not a character trait.
That is a character trait. Cowardice.
It's a
journey.
You're right.
Hero's journey.
He's a coward who likes kung fu.
Yeah.
That's all you can say about his character. There's nothing else there.
No, there's.
If there's anything else there, you're putting that on.
I'm not putting
it
on there. There's plenty of nice. Small little moments where just like a character shines through right there, especially one that's like probably my favorite part of the movie is this little moment that he has where they're caught in the sandstorm and he goes over to Jet Li and just like, you know, expresses his fears to him, and just Jet Li just very calmly just tells him, just remember, breathe. And it's just, I was totally enraptured with the whole thing, and just he was a guy I could root for. He's like, I, you know, basically the start of the movie is pretty much like the never-ending story.
Yeah, totally.
And it does have a very much an 80s, again, another 80s feel to it, and just that type of where just a young kid kind of, you know, comes up and, like, triumphs, and then, like, at the end, it's with never-ending story, he flies the dragon, chases down his...
It was exactly that.
Yeah, but in this one, he, like, you know, basically takes his kung fu skills that he's used and just beats the shit out of these, these greasy punks.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's plenty of there for him to be a likable character and to root for, and I was very pleased at the fact that he does kung fu in the movie, and it's not just terrible.
Yeah.
He does a good job, and, like, there's actual good stuff.
The kid, you mean?
The kid, yeah. He's actually doing good moves, and, like, you know,
he
becomes an actual part of the movie, which I was worried just, like, they would literally toss him to the side just in, like, concentrating on
people. Like, wow, that's awesome!
They did throw him around a couple times.
They did throw him around. He's given something to do because he's kind of your conduit into the movie.
Right.
I found him very likable.
I don't know. He's a framing device made into a character to me.
He's a limited character. But I feel like you're being way too harsh.
Yeah,
likewise, I feel Herbert is giving him too much credit. I again take the middle road position.
Yeah.
I always liked Jackie Chan, but something about his sense of humor in this kind of shined through for me.
Really?
More so than
I thought there was a lot less humor.
Really?
Him. Yeah.
Not
it
as
wasn't like his character.
It wasn't as much jokes as it was his kind of his demeanor.
His betrayal.
His the way he went about his business. He kind of always had a sort of a grin on his face. And that endeared me to the movie.
Yeah, he was just sort of an affable guy. He didn't have a lot of pathos that, like, he needs. And, you know, if you're the star of the movie, you need something wrong with you.
Yeah,
you know? And
Jackie Chan is really likable.
Right.
Yeah, well, Jackie Chan is really likable.
I actually, my observation from the movie is, I wasn't so crazy about Jackie Chan in it, but I did like Jet Li. And I think what it comes down to is I think I prefer Jet Li when he's not being terribly genuine. I kind of like seeing him, like, piss on Jackie Chan. Like,
that was really, I like that. Sort of
fool around and, like, trick people. More so than I enjoyed, like, watching Hero and watching him play a much more straight character. And similarly, I like Jackie Chan when there is more of sort of an emotional edge to him, like in when Legend of the Drunken Master was released. And that's sort of, I think, the perfect vehicle for him as an actor, because he gets to act silly and goofy, but there's also the subplot where he's, like, disgracing his family.
Yeah, that's funny, actually. Happy that the fighting was more, it wasn't all grounded in reality, but it was more so, I would say probably 80% of it was, which I like that a whole lot more than people flying around on wires and stuff. But I thought about the fighting, it was well shot, which I give it big points for, because so many movies nowadays have, I guess, what people call the shaky cam, where you just get lots of close-ups and you don't really get oriented. And this was nice, you really can see what's going on. I wasn't that impressed by fighting.
It's more PC to say you get Asian'd.
That's
very important. Yeah, I might agree with Seth. I mean, I feel like the whole movie was sort of like a light lunch.
I definitely
enjoyed it, but like, there's not like something that I'd like really rave about. But I definitely enjoyed the whole ride.
Yeah, if somebody was asking me, you know, should I see this movie, I would certainly never steer them away from it. But I would also try and steer them towards something with a little more substance.
Well, I might not do that at this point. The movies that have come out recently.
Personally. Well, yeah, right.
It's funny, Chris, because you said your feelings on Jackie Chan, Jet Li. I actually feel the exact opposite. Whenever I see him silently staring, I get very, I don't get chills down my spine, but I feel, man, I would not want to fuck with him. But when he opens his mouth, he has kind of like a high voice, and it sort of deflates a lot of his ominous presence. Whereas Jackie Chan, I mean, when I think about it, a lot of the movies I've seen him in, even though like Rush Hour is a comedy, but he's the straight man, he's a straight character. Whereas this one, he's very much He's more the comic relief, and I liked him a lot more as that than as the kind of the straight-laced, straight-faced guy.
Yeah, again, I might agree with Seth on that one, because I enjoy Jet Li quite a bit in Hero and in movies like Lethal Weapon 4, which I think he has a very, very good presence. But in this movie, for both Jackie Chan and Jet Li, there's a lot of dialogue that they have to carry, and like Jackie Chan has to provide narration, which aren't these two guys' strong points. Yeah. So I feel like
also you learn Jackie Chan is the better American actor.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I feel like there's they're more like almost tools rather than actors in a lot of ways. So I feel like even though I do enjoy them both quite a bit.
You know what's weird
has to be used appropriately.
You know what's odd is that I just made that complaint about Jet Li, but I like him quite a bit in Unleashed. And
I do like him in Unleashed too,
I think it's a genuinely good performance. Not. I think better than his performance here.
Yeah, but in Unleashed, he's just sort of moping around for the majority of the movie. So
he's not pissing
really
out Jackie Chan.
Too well.
I was surprised at how much of the comedy I got into. Because I saw it separate from you guys, and I saw it alone, and I was actually laughing out loud at a few times. Not, it wasn't hysterical, but I was amused and delighted by certain moments, which it seemed like they put some kind of effort into the comedy. Maybe it was not that much, but they didn't just, I feel like they had a good time making it, and they didn't just put in jokes because, okay, we need a joke here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I did get a good feeling from it. I thought that that Jet Li as the Monkey King did an interesting performance.
Yeah.
I enjoyed him a lot more than I thought I would. And
I initially hated the Monkey King.
Yeah.
Or I think it was the King Monkey, actually.
I think the bounty hunter chick, who I really enjoyed. But,
I wanted to mention her later.
I think she called him King Monkey.
Yeah. Regarding the King Monkey / Monkey King, I initially really didn't like his antics.
His little intro.
Yeah, but then for somehow towards the end of the movie, I was really like,
you were glad to see him.
Glad, yeah. I don't have any explanation for that.
Yeah.
I guess you get one over because of the fact that Jet Li is playing the other guy. So then, like, you really like him. Somebody shows up and is like, hey, I like this guy.
Maybe, or maybe it's because he really gets screwed over by the Jade Warrior or whatever.
Warlord.
Yeah, bounty hunter chick was really hot.
She was.
She's really, 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 really good looking.
She was actually, I think, my least favorite part of the movie.
Really?
I thought she was the worst character. I didn't particularly like, what's his face? The white guy. But for me, at least, the most sort of cookie cutter of the characters. I do.
She was so
hot. I didn't find her particularly attractive.
I found myself. I'm embarrassed to admit this. I found myself rooting for her in fight scenes just because of that.
I feel like something that could have made this a good or great movie for me, as opposed to what it was, an average movie, is the guy, the protagonist in it, the guy from sort of our world, is sort of a conduit into this magical realm. I would have liked it a lot more if they just dumped the conduit and felt empowered enough to just sort of dwell in the magical realm without him.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that with the energy the movie had and the way it was directed, that would have made it great for me.
Well, then at that point you get a completely different feeling movie. And I very much like the atmosphere, just kind of that traveler being sent. But then again, I'm a fan of just like people fish out of water like that. I'm a huge fan of Big Trouble in China, which is kind of almost in a little bit of a way,
yeah,
too.
I can see
at the
that.
Same time, just, it's a lot of fun.
Little Trouble in Big China.
Yeah. So you gotta keep that. If you dump the kid, I mean, you're gonna get a completely different movie, and I think they would, you know, at that point, you'd be trying to play up the more epic, mythic story
I think
elements.
You could have had a kid character that was, you know, new to the world, but was just like a farmer, a Chinese farmer or something, and had that be the
I do agree that it would be a very different movie. I think it would be a much better movie.
Okay.
What always drives me nuts about movies where, you know, somebody goes to a magical land is that they're always like, God, I gotta get out of this magical land. It sucks here.
When the end, when he says, you know, you've provided services, blah, blah, blah. What do you want? He says, I just want to go home. Like, man, why do you want to go home?
You're always a
coward and the bullies pick on you. You have no life outside of kung fu movies.
Yeah.
Whereas here you can live in this mythical kung fu movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone respects you and loves you. But I'm just going to go back to
you.
He doesn't
really have a life. I mean, his life at the end that you see is he's just sort of doing his kung fu shit on like a rooftop in Boston. The problem is the skills he acquires in the mythical land, no matter how good he gets it, those aren't really skills that are going to translate in a meaningful way into his life in modern Boston.
Well, and also think about how boring the rest of his life is going to be compared to this adventure he's had.
Yeah.
It's all going to be downhill from there.
You guys are really cynical. Well, I mean, he might not have that much to do now that everyone's been beaten.
Cynical because we're assuming that he's not going to jump into another portal.
He's going out on top. He's going out on top. No reason to stick around. This is the best that's going to come to him in this world.
I would have stayed in mythical
China. I object to the claim that I'm cynical. I'm the one who wants him to stay in the whimsical world of magic.
Well, but you guys are merely thinking just because he going back to the land, I mean, it's just like, oh, it's all shit again.
Well, even if
he dominates.
Yeah. I mean, even presumably, you know, he leads a happier life and he improves himself. And I get that. But I'm just saying, if he improves his life as much as he possibly could within reality, it's not going to be as cool as the mythical land he was in.
Yeah. I mean, I can concede to that, but just, I mean, this, I mean, just the,
it's,
like,
it's
the,
not a big,
yeah, I mean, just like, just for me, I mean, the final line of the movie, the end of one journey is the beginning of another. I like that sort of philosophy, and I just like this, the way it carries through. And probably because since I like the movie so much, I'm just of the mind of, I mean, there's plenty of things that I could see that were wrong with it, but just since I like the movie so much, I'm not going to mention a bad thing about it.
The end of one journey is the start of another working the buffet line at P.F. Chang's.
that's cinema.
that line was a variation of that line was sort of kind of used at the end of another fantastic film, Mr. McGorry. Yeah. What do you guys like better, this or Mr. McGorry?
I haven't seen Mr. McGorry,
but you like this better.
Well, I can't say I haven't seen
it. No, you do.
Yeah.
What made me laugh in a kind of bad way was that the kid was like, when are you going to start teaching me Kung Fu? You're just having me do this. It's like he's never seen Karate Kid, despite all the Kung Fu movies he's seen. He's like, this is just busy work. I'm not learning to do martial arts by building up my muscles. I've never seen a movie where this happens.
Also, in the beginning of the film, when he gets hassled by the bullies, they mention that he just bought Enter the Dragon. I feel like he would have already owned it.
Yeah, that was...
I mean,
yeah,
I noticed that. I'm not going to mark the movie down. Right, it popped into my head.
I'm sure he's seen it, that he's like, oh, I'm finally going to buy it. I'm
sure we've all had that scenario, like, there's this one movie that we really, really like a lot, but we just haven't bought it yet, even though we own, like,
I don't think
like Rush Hour 2 or Nick of Time or something like that, but we don't own, like, Godfather Part 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
That does exist. Yeah, sure. So let's go easy on it.
Every time they show a close-up of the Jade Emperor, and as a Law and Order fan, Hurlburt, mm-hmm. I'll see what you think. Every time they showed a close-up, I thought, man, he really looks like an Asian version of Jesse L. Martin.
Really? I did not think that once. Now I will forever think it. Yeah. Said it.
Regardless of its accuracy.
It sort of had like the something you brought up to me, Kevin, about these type of films is like in Lord of the Rings, where you really get the sense that they're walking like everywhere, that this is a big journey.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't really that, no. But it's certainly much more that than like a movie like In the Name of the King or...
Oh, yeah.
Or like, even like a better example, that I'm sure there are that I can't think of. It did capture the journey aspect of the film.
It did... Oh, sorry. It did feel like it went over the course of, some time. I was kind of worried that it was going to be like... Then he learns Kung Fu in like
and
a week.
Here.
Yeah, but it clearly felt like, months already, of training, maybe.
Well, yeah, because the indicator of that was he had grown his hair out. It was a ponytail, right. Which I was very happy they did something like. So that's months that they were going on this. Because I was very happy to see that this adventure movie actually had adventuring, which you run into sometimes with your adventure films. It's just, there's not much adventuring going on. It's just mainly these kind of people like hanging out in certain locations.
Yeah.
And then they're at the end all of a sudden. You're like, how'd they get there?
Yeah. one problem I had, I mean, I don't want to say detracted, but it sort of annoyed me a little, is they keep saying that Jackie Chan's an immortal, but then there's all these ways that he can stop being immortal and be killed.
Well, and then
it revealed
that he was not an immortal.
He failed, like, a mortal class, or...
Yeah, there was some test he had to pass that he failed.
I went to the bathroom, actually.
And he mentions to the fact that he's glad to be mortal.
Right. He says that he'd much rather be mortal, but he still seems pretty damn pleased with himself when he drinks the immortality of starts kicking ass.
Well, that's when you get to see how the other half lives.
He gets to come back to life. Wouldn't you be excited too?
Yeah, if you're on the brink of death, you might be excited to die as well.
Because I was so excited because I knew that they were going to bring Jackie Chan back. They're just going to put him on the sidelines for the final fight.
I was
so happy when he finally shows up and starts
fighting.
Me
too, I was too. I was thinking, I was like, man, this is kind of a bold movie to take out. Yeah. You got the two big heavyweights of martial arts films and take one of them out of the picture halfway through. Yeah. But they didn't do that. I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
One part I did like, just because I've never seen it in a movie, and it struck me as somewhat creative, is in the very end, again, the bounty hunter chick with the white hair, when she falls down and wraps her hair around Jackie Chan and then starts climbing up by pulling her own hair. That was cool. I like when I see simple things like that that I've never seen in a movie before.
Well, it's called the reverse Rapunzel. It's pretty common.
That struck me as weird because I feel like at the point where I'm to believe that she can like send her hair out and whip her hair around, I should reasonably be able to believe that if she wraps her hair around something, she can, like, fling herself up, like she doesn't have to sort of shimmy up it like she's in gym class and she's climbing a rope.
That would be defying physics.
Well, maybe it's just like a whip. She only has one snap.
Well, she has a physical whip, too.
Yeah, she has two whips. Her hair and a whip. Something that I thought was cool was that she had her own theme. I thought the music, actually, of the movie was pretty good. I thought it had a pretty good score. And I liked the individual touches, like the theme for the Bounty Hunter and just the different musical choices.
I didn't notice the score at all.
Really? I thought it was pretty good. Cool.
The only time I noticed it was... I'm not going to deride it, because I'd say it was okay. But I... because I didn't really notice it too much. But the only time I did notice it was when he first gets kind of transported through the portal, and then he kind of opens the door and looks outside, and you see the big sprawling landscape, and it's like one of those, like, no, look how majestic this is. I don't like that in movies. But, I mean, I'll buy the soundtrack and listen to it.
I thought the score was pretty cool. I thought it was sort of standard kung fu music, but mixed with sort of like a Sergio Leone sort of Western-esque guitar.
Let's not overstate it. It was all right. It was not Sergio Leone.
It wasn't quite that, but it was reminiscent of that. I thought it was good.
Yeah. Much like Run, Fat Boy, Run isn't quite high fidelity.
Shit is. Forbidden Kingdom was like, oh, we got Jackie Chan and the movie together.
They didn't skimp on the Jackie Chan. I'm very glad they didn't.
I found that I really, in this movie, realized how much I love kung fu fights where somebody's trying to get something and they're both trying to get it from each other.
It's really enjoyable. Those are good. I also like it when they can't get a good footing.
Yeah, that too.
They've got scaffolds or like things that are flimsy. Yeah. Because they built it. There wasn't really that in this movie, but that's a good treat as well.
It pops up a few times.
Yeah. I saw a website and it had Jackie Chan's top five favorite films of all time.
What was it?
It was Sound of Music, Inconvenient Truth, Jurassic Park.
This is already a crazy mix.
Police Story, which he's in. And, there's one other one that I can't remember.
Magnolia.
Six. And also, I wanted to add that the fifth movie on Jackie Chan's list of favorite movies is Analyze This.
That's right!
That is such a crazy movie.
His reason being Analyze This because of Robert De Niro.
The Robert De Niro role.
Yes.
You know what's a funny image? Is Jackie Chan sitting like in his living room watching Analyze This, and the part of Analyze This where Robert De Niro is talking to Billy Crystal, and he says, "I go fag, you die." And then Jackie Chan is laughing uproariously, like spilling popcorn all over himself.
But Robert, what would you give it as his biggest supporter?
I would give it an 8. I have to see it again before I give it a 9. But just, I mean, I really do love the movie, but it's just at the same time, I have the feeling this, like, you know, maybe a 9 would be too high, so I'll stick with the 8.
I'm going to give it a 6. I'm going to give it a high 6, though. I almost want to give it a 7, but I'm immediately thinking of another Jet Li movie that I would give a 7, Fearless, which I know I like more. So I distinctly put it as a 6, but I recommend it. I highly recommend it.
Isn't Fearless with Jeff Bridges?
They're two movies.
That is an absolutely excellent movie.
I'll give it a 5.5. I'll tell you why though, because I did say
it's a pretty devastating earthquake.
I said in the beginning that I thought it was average, and it's a little above average for me. I recognized the shoddy filmmaking at times. I mean, filmmaking that was shoddy in ways that don't matter in this kind of movie. You know what I mean? Like, for example, I don't think the main white kid was much of a character. I don't think that really detracts much from what I want when I see this movie. So a 5.5, it was... What?
Give me more of that white kid.
That was the thought behind 21.
Is that why I like this movie so much? Blackjack and Kung Fu. That's what John Robert needs to like a movie.
You just love movies either where white guys sort of get thrown in with their Asian counterparts, or where white guys sort of take over the role of their Asian counterparts.
I think you guys got me nailed. I'm getting rights now. I can't live this down.
5.5, little above average, left me with a pleasant feeling, but I can't quite give it a 6.
I would give it a 7. I enjoyed it. It was, you know, for the filmmaking issues that I noted, that it's probably not a 7. But in terms of just enjoyment, which is really all you can rate, I give it a 7. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, wow, that was a really good kung fu movie, which would have been an 8 for me. But it was a fun movie. I'd forgotten how much I really do like kung fu movies, and it reminded me.
A proper film going experience is exactly that. It's an experience. Yeah. And if a film can give you that, that's amazing, just what film can do.
I agree.
Sometimes you just kind of lose yourself to it.
Again, yeah. Chris is shaking his head.
I was just viewing your little manifesto through the prism of 21.
Yeah, plus I've often said that debating movies is inherently meaningless, because you're not going to convince me that I had a good time if I didn't, and the reverse is true. I'm not going to convince Robert that 21 was a bad movie if he had a good time seeing it twice. Yeah. I mean, there's no argument that will win that.
I think that's true with movies most of the time, but there have been times when someone brings up, like, a crucial part of the movie that changes it. But I think that's definitely true with music. Arguing about music is just the most pointless thing ever, because it goes into your ear and it's either pleasing or it's not, and no arguments can change that. But that's another topic for another day.
Debating about movies may be pointless, but yet we trudge along anyway, blindly into oblivion.
Did we just send ourselves into retirement?
Let's look out of that.
Debating about Ray J. Johnson's routine is kind of similar, too. That's the second time I've mentioned Ray J. on this podcast.
He's that dominant of a character.
You see the guy in the sex tape with Kim Kardashian?
No.
Good discussion. Up next, we've got Forgettable Villains from Forgettable Films and Pod Monkey, so stay tuned.
You got a light, buddy?
Yeah, sure, kid. There you go.
And your wallet.
Nick, give him your wallet.
What for?
He's got a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
All right, Forgettable Villains from Forgettable Films.
Give me a name.
Fuck you! That's my name!
Dumpy Joe.
Agent Smith.
Proud Looker.
Kaiser Soze.
Illinois Nazis.
Rocco. Mad Dog.
Mother.
Garuga.
Kittredge.
Wanda. Willa.
Wilkes! You can call me Susan if it makes you happy.
From Warriors of Virtue, Komodo.
I don't know what Warriors of Virtue is.
It's a bad movie. It's a bad movie. A similar movie to the one we just reviewed. A much worse
minus,
but then some people might say Rob Minkoff would have made Warriors of Virtue a better film, hence with the talking animals.
Yeah, it's
the talking kangaroos that he would have to deal with.
It's a movie where this kind of dork kid gets sucked into like a magical fantasy world, and they're like,
sounds
these,
awesome.
They're these kung fu fighting kangaroos he teams up
really?
With.
Yeah. Oh,
man. And they have to take down, how do you say his name? Angus McFadden?
He's asking
Angus
me.
McFadden. Oh. Angus McFadden.
The idea of kangaroos.
Who plays the nefarious Komodo?
The ideas of kangaroos like hopping around in boxing gloves, punching people, is always really pleasing.
They look disgusting in the movie. Yeah. They look absolutely wretched.
His character concepts, I imagine on paper, like, hey, this looks really cool, but then, like, there's something that got lost, and this is like, demon.
They have the audacity to set up, like, sort of like a sexy female kangaroo, too, and she looks the worst of all.
They do.
She looks the worst. She looks terrible. So it's time for Pod Monkeys.
Alive in
Pod. Pod.
Get your
Pod
to Mars.
Your move.
Pod.
Bring me everyone. I mean everyone.
Everyone. Kevin, do you mind explaining my segment for the audience?
I'd like you to explain to me. It involves you coming up with titles that everyone hates, and you present them to us, and we say we hate them. And theoretically, it could end with us loving it and changing the name of this this perfect podcast, but it seems unlikely at this point.
You said theory.
surely, Sean, you don't actually like these titles, do you?
No, I love these titles.
Really?
See, the thing is, I don't like the Edwin Pober Film Club. I mean, I don't like the title.
Okay.
I don't. I think
you like the club, though. You like the club.
I like the club itself.
Yeah, I do like the club itself. I think there are a lot of better titles out there. The five I'm about to present to you right now.
Surely at the very least. Least like Edwin Pobert Film Club, you would prefer to say just sort of a mishmash of insanity like Dynamite Dave and the Podcast Brunch Bunch.
I think that was a better title, but that's a different debate.
Do you have any more titles for us?
I do. I've got five new titles for you.
Let's hear them.
Here we go. Here's number one. Don't look a GIF podcast in the mouth.
Oh, man.
Hell.
That doesn't work because a podcast doesn't have a mouth. A gift horse does. The podcast.
Well,
does not.
I mean, it's a. You sort of have to roll with it.
That sort of also implies that our podcast is kind of shitty, but people shouldn't critique it.
Yeah, because it's free. Yeah, unlike all those other podcasts.
Also, it's a play on words that I don't want to give the credit of calling it a play on words.
Yeah.
Well, it still is.
It's more of more of a replacement.
number two, Major Pod and the Movie Cadets.
Major Pod again. I just don't like the sound of that.
Right. I don't think you're going to sell anyone on having the word pod in the name of the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. We'll see.
It's an uphill battle.
We'll see.
Up a mountain. It's 90 degrees. And tilting backwards, so then it's more than 90 degrees.
Some motherfucker's always trying to ice skate uphill.
That'd be funny if that was his next title.
Covered in oil.
PIDS. Podcast Immune Deficiency Syndrome.
That's hilarious because of AIDS, how funny AIDS is.
We can associate our podcast with a disease.
That is the laziest one you've ever come up with.
Because
you don't like the word PIDS though?
It's essentially the poor that's just the poor man's version of my CIV joke.
Yeah.
I don't remember that one.
A cat immunodeficiency virus.
Oh, that was funny. Right,
not like your title.
Sean Hurlburt's Evil Movie Massacre.
So what? Am I evil or am I destroying bad movies?
No, it's you're not evil, but it's your evil creation. The creation is evil. You are not evil.
You're like a mad scientist. This is your demon spawn.
So I've created a podcast that destroys movies.
You've forsaken God and man to create this podcast.
I like that more than any of the others you've suggested.
It's still in no way a feasible
good
title.
Are you guys ready for the last one?
The name's Sean Hobart, good, right?
Yeah, I like that one. Let's make it good.
I think this is the best one.
Here we go.
White pods can't cast.
Again,
the smile on Chris.
Another title that derides our podcast and sort of makes it seem like we don't like it very much.
Yeah. Like we don't know what we're doing.
We know what we're doing.
They're very, very amusing, but you know, the adults have to talk too. You know,
none of you guys like one of these titles to replace.
If everyone else liked Sean Hurlburt's Evil Podcast Massacre, I would vote yes. Massacre.
Well, there will be no risk of that.
So, what would be your guys' favorites, though?
That'd be my favorite.
Of course.
Come on.
But it's still a bad title.
No, my favorite's Never Look a Gift Pod in the Mouth. Because it's such a witty play on words. It works on like four different levels.
Oh, well. I'll be back next week. Perhaps then I will convince you.
Yeah.
All right. Another podcast. podcast done. We had some laughs here tonight, right? We did.
Another lesson learned.
Another lesson learned. Fuck you.
One journey ends, another begins.
I wanna reach out to our audience now. If you wanna contribute, if you wanna just talk to us and make suggestions, or just send us your comments. Give us an email at edwinpolbert@gmail.com, and please talk to us. Let us know that you're alive out there. And this is Sean Sterling. Everyone say goodbye.
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 Bye.
Goodbye.